This is News. Thanks for joining us. Leave or face death. This is yet another warning the Israeli military has issued to residents living in the northern part of the besieged Gaza Strip. The warning comes as hundreds of thousands of Gazans have already moved southward to take refuge in temporary shelters. However, the areas they have fled to are also being hit by Israeli warplanes and artillery. More than 4,700 Palestinians have been killed since the regime launched its onslaught on Gaza over 2 weeks ago. More than 16,000 people have been wounded. According to the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, or UNRWA, it has also lost at least 29 of its staff in Israeli bombardments. In the meantime, the Israeli military said one of its tanks had accidentally fired at an Egyptian post near the border with Gaza. Meanwhile, Israeli warplanes have rained down bombs in areas around three hospitals in Gaza, adding to the immense strain on medical facilities in the besieged territory. According to Palestinian media reports, Israeli missiles hit the vicinity of Al-Shifa and Al-Quds hospitals in Gaza City. The strike was also heard near Indonesia Hospital in northern Gaza, and its director reported injuries and severe damage to the complex. But there were no immediate reports of possible destruction and injuries near the two other hospitals. On Saturday, Israel ordered 20 hospitals in Gaza, including Al-Quds, to evacuate. The regime is facing a chorus of condemnation from around the world over its bombardment of the Al-Ahli Hospital on Tuesday. Nearly 500 people, including those who had taken refuge from Israel's assaults, were killed in the strike. Priya Riagoda is with the Federation of Iraqi Trade Unions. She tells us about the need for solidarity with Palestinians amid Israel's onslaught on Gaza and the normalization deals between some Arab states and the regime.
Right now, the people of Gaza and the children of Gaza are dying, and the world is quiet. Even some of the Arab countries that pretend to be concerned for the future of Jerusalem and its liberation, they are now normalizing with Israel. This thing, the normalization, which is humiliating and frightening, because the people of Palestine is in need of total solidarity and support, and a firm stand of every Arab and all free people of the world. We are embroiled with them in the struggle, even though we are from far-off lands geographically. We continue our struggle with them in order to prepare and mobilize the Arab public opinion and international public opinion in order to assist and support and stand firmly with the struggle of the Palestinian people. And now I believe that the Iraqi people will spare nothing, will not hold back to be with the Palestinian people in solidarity. And in fact, some youth have all the determination to go to Palestine in order to help their people in Gaza.
Israel says one of its troops was killed and three others injured during a raid into the Gaza Strip. The Israeli military spokesman says the raid was carried out as part of preparation for a ground attack and to gather intelligence. Earlier, the military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas said that it had ambushed an Israeli armored unit that had trespassed a few meters into the territory. The Al-Qassam brigades added that two Israeli bulldozers and a tank were destroyed, and the forces retreated back across the separation fence. Hamas has warned that Gaza will turn into a graveyard for invaders. The resistance movement has also been firing thousands of missiles into Israel. Since the beginning of Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, at least 1,500 Israelis have been killed and nearly 5,000 injured. Israel is also escalating its atrocities in the West Bank while continuing relentless bombardment of the Gaza Strip. The regime forces have killed two more Palestinians in the occupied territory. 17-year-old Jihad Salah and Muhammad Abu Zer, aged 29, were fatally shot during an Israeli raid on the town of Zawata, west of Nablus. Two other Palestinians were injured by the regime's live bullets. Earlier, another young Palestinian was killed by Israeli troops near a refugee camp north of Al-Khalil. Since the start of Israel's bloody war on Gaza, 93 Palestinians have been killed and some 1,400 others injured in the West Bank. Well, doctors in the Gaza Strip say that the situation is getting more catastrophic due to a shortage of medical supplies and electricity. Okay, let's bring in a guest, Arzu Mirali, co-founder of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, who joins us from London. Arzu Mirali, welcome to the program. It's hard to keep composure after 17 days, whether you're a journalist, whether you're a reporter, whether you're anything or a human, to look at what's unfolding there, because no matter what's been said, what's been covered, and how this whole situation has been handled, the regime forces of Israel are continuing with their bombardments, and we're seeing casualties mount What are your thoughts on this?
I wholeheartedly agree with that. It's very, very hard to be composed or calm, to give a sort of what quiet is very, very difficult. 17 days, as awful as they have been, I think we need to also put this into a context that this is not something aberrant or unusual. This is an escalation of an ongoing genocide for 75 years. I think we have to really both have the courage to describe what is happening now as genocide and genocidal, but also that that is actually the culmination of decades and decades, really since the beginning of the founding of this regime, and actually we can give it 100 years since the beginning of the project, or the elevation of the Zionist project with the Balfour Declaration, which, you know, brings the British into this whole scene as being highly complicit, and then we have the international community as it developed, protecting this sort of last vestige of colonialism, keeping a footing, if you like, of the old colonial powers in West Asia. And that struggle has become, for the rest of the world actually, in which they see their liberation struggles. So this painful, painful scenario we're seeing, as abhorrent as it is, we also know that this is a moment that everything changes. I think all of us can see that now, that it's not business as usual as regards to the response to Israel's crimes. Israel's crimes have been going on for however long. Things are changing, and sadly, it's the blood of the Palestinians that is the price of it. But things will never be the same again.
Arzu, I'm curious as to what you think about protests like the one we just saw in Germany. I don't know if you saw what occurred, but basically it was about protesters, what came out showing the solidarity with the Palestinians. It got a little violent, and there were some scuffles between the German police and security forces and the protesters. A couple things of note there that I'd like to get an idea on is couldn't help but see so many young people that were out there. And the second factor that I'm really curious as to what you think is how it appears that this war isn't just the only cause that has brought people out in the numbers that it has, which, again, your opinion matters here, but I think that people have experienced the suffering of the Palestinians in one form or another throughout the years, especially through the wars. So they're educated enough, which is why they have come out in the numbers that they have with this war to have broken out, to show their anger and to vent their frustration. But a lot of them seem to be aware of what the Palestinian cause is. Do you see it that way? And what are your thoughts on these protests, which in different countries, like France in particular, the forces there are trying to suppress them and contain them?
Ahead when you said that people have been feeling the pain of the Palestinians, they've been following this, they are very, very connected to it. I think it goes back to the fact that somehow Palestine has become emblematic of everybody's liberation struggles. And I think it's a huge own goal for Western governments, particularly, you know, France, UK, Germany. I didn't see the footage, but I've been seeing footage come out of Germany and all the Western European countries for the last 17 days. That the more they are just ridiculously and shamelessly in support of Israel, this is going to upset ordinary people, not necessarily just Muslims, not necessarily just youth, who can see manifest injustice in taking that position. I can't see your screen, but you described it very eloquently, that you are seeing this Gaza skyline on fire, basically. We are seeing this all the time. This is not even in these 17 days. There's always been periodic bombings. There's always been bombings, etc., etc. And for any state or regime or institution of the state to come out in support of the power that is inflicting a medieval siege on an imprisoned population, whether it's in these 17 days or whether it's outside of those 17 days, because let's not forget there was a siege on Gaza all of this time. For a state to come out and support a regime who, through its soldiers, its police, and its complicit, you know, Palestinian authority in the West Bank, to be killing and shooting at peaceful protesters, children, accusing them of being terrorists, it's no wonder. It doesn't even matter how skewed the media is. People are able to see of the lie that there is any justification for anything the regime is doing. And they have become deeply, deeply embedded in the Palestinian cause. Now, you talked about the suppression of those. Well, Palestine is very, very now kind of intertwined with calls for justice on many, many issues. So it's no longer about, okay, we're clamping down on pro-Palestinian activism because we want to support Israel. It's actually about suppressing any kind of dissent to these states. Because there are a lot of things to complain about in these states as well. Yes, of course, we're not under siege. We're not being targeted by military. But we have many, many issues going on. We have huge disparities of wealth. We have collapsing economies. We have a climate crisis. We have, for example, in a country like France, such embedded violent racism in the system that, you know, the actual basic norms of society are fraying at the edges. You know, there's no longer a kind of civilized discourse when it comes to social relations. So we have that kind of enmeshment of these issues. And Palestine, as I said, has become the symbol of liberation, not just for the Palestinians, but for many, many people in many settings.
All right, so Murali, the point that she made, which were several, and it was to the point in so many occasions, I'd like to ask you about how she said Israel is waging a war of ethnic cleansing. Given the position that she has in terms of not only a representation of South Africa, but also of BRICS as a whole, and the number of countries that are associated with that organization or with that group trade bloc, I should say, what do you think of what she said?
I think she used a very interesting phrase. She said, whether we are going to seek justice for the Palestinians through the United Nations or some other organization. And once more, we're seeing in these 17 days the irrelevance and the uselessness of the United Nations. I'm old enough to remember when the Israeli regime bombed a UN peacekeeping center in southern Lebanon, which was full of refugees, and slaughtered some hundred and so Lebanese seeking shelter. It isn't even just an aberration. We have so many of these incidents over the years, whether it's in southern Lebanon or Palestine or elsewhere, perpetrated by the Israeli regime. And the UN has been sitting there and has not even been able to do anything. It's all itself. And so her comments that what is that other organization, and as you mentioned, South Africa is a cornerstone of BRICS, and we now have Iran and other countries being taken into that fold of that organization. We have to ask, we have a new world rising. We have the idea now that progressive nations, these are the nations that actually seek justice for Palestine. Again, Palestine becomes a cornerstone of the ideological foundation of that new world. What are the institutions that could be developed or the mechanisms developed to find a lasting justice and peace for the region? And I think it's a key question now. We have the organizations like ASEAN, we have the the OIC. Let's not perhaps deviate about its usefulness or uselessness, however you want to see it. But ultimately, there are possibilities now to actually create institutions, whether they're legal institutions like courts or whether they are for intergovernmentality, to find resolution. The United Nations is becoming irrelevant. Westernized countries, with their failed support of the Israeli regime, are also making themselves irrelevant to this new world that's rising. So I pray and I hope that we can quickly and peacefully, but where it is, now we no longer just look to the United Nations. I think we have a new set of options, and we need to be working as much on those as trying to use the existing system.
Thank you very much for your contribution, Urza Murali. Do appreciate it. Co-founder of the Islamic Human Rights Commission from London. Let's bring in Simonson Abbas, a political commentator who joins us also from London. Simonson Abbas, welcome. We were just speaking with our guests about the relevancy of the UN, in this case in point, more so than ever before, of a situation that they have been long aware of and been familiar with. I'd like to get your thoughts on that and how we are still seeing the Israeli regime forces continue with their bombardment. We just noticed in the past 5 minutes, not noticed, but we witnessed two huge strikes where the explosion as a result of it just completely filled the skyline.
Yes, first of all, the weapons which the Israelis are using, phosphorus bombs and the like, you know, the guided missiles, the awareness of the Israelis about the reality on the ground, whether it's a mosque or whether it's a hospital, the fact they have all that intelligence, yet that they still choose to use these, you know, absolutely devastating weapons, knowing full well they're going to take out most of these children and these mums and ordinary civilians. It just has really laid bare, I think, to the world just how barbaric this whole entity is. I mean, if there was any shadow of a doubt before, this campaign really has nailed it. You've seen people on the ground turning out in their, you know, hundreds of thousands. In London this weekend, 300,000 people, and if you look at any capital around the world, the same sort of numbers are turning out. So the people are becoming aware, if they weren't aware already, and they're certainly also bringing their sort of actions. But it's into the backing of the Palestinians, the leaders and the institutions that you talk about. Of course, this is a really key issue, because now we've seen this far too many times, and it's far too blatantly obvious again that the institutions which are meant to protect children, meant to protect the oppressed, meant to support equality, justice, democracy, etc., they are all just selectively used and abused by the people who actually created them. And if we cannot forget that the institutions that we have today, the international institutions that are created, they're largely created on the back of Zionist control, money lending, the entire system.
And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. Sunak's visit to Tel Aviv is a shaming day for Britain. It marks the moment that all those claims to represent fairness, decency and the rule of law have been abandoned. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, Sunak made a mistake when he expressed Britain's unequivocal support for the Zionist regime, thus giving Netanyahu, leader of the most far-right government in the Zionist regime's history, carte blanche to order war crimes. Sunak's reckless language means that Britain is already complicit in the carnage committed across Gaza by Zionist regime bombing over the last days, the destruction of hospitals and civilian infrastructure, the targeting of schools, the wiping out of entire families, and the slaughter of approaching 4,000 Palestinians. To be fair, this policy of giving the Zionist regime impunity to commit war crimes did not start with Sunak. It was reaffirmed recently by then Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who, in a letter to the Conservative Friends of Israel in April 2021, announced that he would block an International Criminal Court investigation into war crimes committed by the Zionist regime. In a further show of support for the Zionist regime, on October 18th, Sunak ordered Britain to abstain on the United Nations resolution calling for humanitarian pauses in order to deliver essential aid to save lives in Gaza. Netanyahu would have got the message, carry on bombing. There has not been one mention, let alone condemnation, of the Zionist regime's declared policy of collective punishment as formally set out by the Zionist regime war minister Yoav Gallant with his announcement of a complete siege on the Gaza Strip. With no electricity, no food, no fuel, everything is closed, even though such action is illegal under international law. Sunak's government is seemingly untroubled by Gallant's claim that Israel was fighting human animals. Gallant has since made the terrible statement that Israel will eliminate everything in Gaza. No condemnation from Sunak or his government. Many Palestinians understandably see this as genocidal language. Remember, Gallant is the war minister in charge of Israeli regime troops. He is sending a murderous message to the troops under his authority who, if Israeli plans go ahead, will soon be entering the densely populated Gazan enclave, home to 2.3 million people. Meanwhile, Sunak has already deployed a naval task force, including a company of Royal Marines, two ships and three helicopters, to the eastern Mediterranean in support of the Zionist regime. According to a British government statement, this military package will reinforce regional stability, yet Sunak imposed no conditions in return for this support. No demands for restraint, no reminders of the Zionist regime's solemn duty to protect civilian life. When asked by Matt Freddy of Channel 4 News whether he would be urging restraint on the Zionist regime, Sunak wouldn't even answer. This is especially remarkable given the outbreak of dehumanizing language among the Zionist regime's political and media elite over the past few days. The activist Yehuda Shaul has compiled a collection of such quotes. They are beyond chilling. Likud MP Revital Gottlieb calls on the Zionist regime to bring down buildings, bomb without distinction, flatten Gaza without mercy. Another Likud MP, Ariel Kalner, calls for Nakba to the enemy now. This deranged discourse has raised no concern from Sunak's Downing Street, not even an eyebrow. There has been no rebuke, and it's easy to see why. The most senior politicians in the Zionist regime are at it, up to and including President Isaac Herzog himself. According to him, nobody is innocent in Gaza. Think of the license to kill this grim statement from the Zionist head of regime, sends out to Israeli troops ahead of the looming invasion. According to Herzog, Gaza civilians are fair game for the slaughter. There is no evidence this trouble Sunak, who met Herzog on his visit to Tel Aviv. Sunak's message, carry on with the slaughter. The Zionist regime has killed more than 1,600 children in Gaza since the latest bombing began, not even a passing mention. In the West Bank, Palestinians are under systematic settler attack amid fears of a wave of ethnic cleansing, no mention. At one point, Sunak even extended his psycho fancy towards Netanyahu into servility, telling the Israeli regime prime minister at their joint press conference that, "I know that you are taking every precaution to avoid harming civilians." A lie which insults the memory of the thousands of Palestinians killed or injured in the Zionist regime bombing raids over the past days. All this means that Sunak's visit to Tel Aviv is a shaming day for Britain. It marks the moment that all the claims of Britain to represent fairness, decency, and the rule of law, admittedly always hypocritical and self-interested, have been abandoned. Sunak's moral vacuum alarms even the dictators and despots whom Britain counts as allies across the West Asia region. The British Prime Minister apparently plans to make a series of visits across the region in the days ahead. Exactly, there is being kept secret, officially for security reasons. The real reason, it is now difficult to guess, is that Sunak is no longer welcome and fears being snubbed. Ever since the Second World War, Britain has claimed to stand up for what they fondly call liberal values. He's made these values worthless. It is hard to exaggerate the scale of this betrayal. Sunak's moral negligence is a tragedy for the Zionist regime itself. The last thing the Zionist regime needs at this dark moment is a blank check to commit further and further war crimes. Sunak had an opportunity, as a true friend of the fabricated regime of Israel, to urge restraint. He has not taken it. Meanwhile, Arab News wrote, Western leaders risk being complicit in war crimes if they continue to support the Zionist regime's actions in the Gaza Strip. An MP from the UK governing Conservative Party told Arab News Western leaders risk being complicit in war crimes. Crispin Blunt is co-director of the International Center of Justice for Palestinians, which announced a notice of intention to prosecute UK government officials for aiding and abetting war crimes in Gaza.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Meetings are being held, resolutions are being proposed, but still there is no relief for 2.2 million Palestinians in Gaza. The bombs continue to explode, missiles continue to be fired, and Palestinians are continuing to be killed. It doesn't matter that half of the population is under 18. There is no safe place in Gaza, where over 4,700 people have been killed by the Israeli regime, with 1,800 of them being kids. How many dead Palestinians are enough for the Zionist regime in Gaza as day 16 comes and goes? Well, I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Out of London, Sami Ramadani, academic and writer. And out of Tripoli, Libyan academic and journalist Mostafa Fetouri. Thank you both for being with me. I'd like to start this off in London. And Sami, the Zionist regime is completely acting like a mad dog, out of control in Gaza. What do you think its ultimate goal with this war on the people of Gaza is?
I think this genocidal war against the Palestinian people has to be viewed within a historic sense, which is that the Zionist regime has been trying to expel the Palestinian people from their homeland for the past 75 years. They have already expelled millions of Palestinians by force from their homeland over the many decades. And they are trying to do the same in Gaza. Their objective is to drive out the Palestinian people. And in the meantime, the only way they think they could achieve it is by killing as many people as possible. As you pointed out, over half the population of Gaza are actually children. Over 1,000 children have already died in this vicious bombardment using the latest weapons supplied by Washington and other Western allies. It is truly a genocidal war, and the world has to act, has to try and force Israel to stop this genocide.
Well, Mostafa, Sami talked about the genocidal war taking place in Gaza, but it's not just Gaza. I mean, if we look at what is happening on the West Bank right now, we're looking at 90 people have been killed since October the 7th. The oppression is continuing, attacks are continuing, and on Saturday alone, 41 Palestinians were injured, and today two others were killed. And so let's look at this side of things, because in Gaza they talk about Hamas, and here on the West Bank, I mean, what is the regime trying to do there?
Well, thank you for having me. And
thank you for coming.
It's actually part of the same story as my colleague Sami mentioned. It's the attempt of the Israeli regime to break down the Palestinian resistance, the first of all, and second, to banish any resistance movement inside Palestine or outside Palestine from ever again thinking about resisting the occupation or attacking what they call Israel, proper Israel, the land that's occupied in 1948 when the Israeli entity was created first, and terror most of all, of course, to kill as many Palestinians as possible. And as you have mentioned, there is no Hamas in the West Bank. There is no music festival over there. And there is no, nobody actually is doing anything to the Israelis. And they have free hand to go and come whenever they want and arrest people and demolish buildings. And just today they bombed two mosques, I believe, in the West Bank, especially in the Jenin refugee camp.
Yes.
So the idea is always the same. Regardless if there is Hamas here or there, or Islamic Jihad here or there, or any other group, it's the same policy, the genocidal policy, to kill as many Palestinians as possible. And if we recall, on the first day, the 7th of October, when Hamas successfully attacked inside Israel itself, the spokesperson of the Israeli army, when he asked about the possibility of mounting civilian casualties in Gaza, he said it's not about the casualties, it's about it's not about the precision, it's about the damage, how much damage we can do. Mm-hmm. And since the war has been declared in Gaza, if we notice, there has been no specific goal or objective of this war other than wiping out Hamas. But practically, in terms of military practices and terms of military operations, what does wiping out a ghost army? Hamas does not have military installations, does not have barracks, does not have radar stations, does not have surveillance, electronic surveillance equipment to be hacked, does not have tank battalions, does not have control rooms where top leaders can control and direct the army or the fighters in the battle, doesn't have any naval installation, does not have any air bases. So what does exactly mean wiping out Hamas, i.e. it actually means wiping out as many Palestinians as possible, ambushing them, if possible, out of Gaza altogether?
Well, Sami, you heard the point that Mustafa just made, wiping out as many Palestinians as possible, because when you're talking about resistance, they're trying to, as they say, wipe out Hamas. But when you're talking about an occupied, or in this situation, a genocide is being against these people in Gaza, of course, they have the right to resist. And can you ever wipe out a resistance? When resistance comes from the people as a natural response to the oppression that they're enduring?
I think you make a good point. This is the lesson of history, not just in Palestine, but across the world. Wherever there were occupations, extreme forms of oppression, wars of genocide, they have always ended in the occupied people and the people who are the subject of extreme oppression, of rising up, and the aggressors, the occupiers, being defeated eventually. And Israel hopes by displacing the Palestinian people, they can change this historical trend and achieve what they want. But I assure you, there is no way on earth that Israel can, this Israeli regime, this fascist regime, can actually defeat the Palestinian people. The Palestinian people in themselves are extremely strong, determined to stay in their land. Those who have been forced out in the past, in 1948 and 1967, are determined to go back. And something also historically quite important that has happened in recent years is that the Palestinian people are no longer alone. The Palestinian people, despite the betrayal of some Arab regimes, have acquired very powerful friends. They have powerful alliances now amongst resistance forces across the region. Whether you're talking about the aggression against the Yemeni people and how the Yemeni resistance became so powerful, they are now strong allies of the Palestinian people. Same in Iraq, which was the subject of a vicious American occupation. Over a million Iraqis were killed. There was also a resistance movement against the U.S. occupation. And some of these resistance forces in Iraq have also declared a strong alliance with the Palestinians. Move on to Lebanon. A powerful Lebanese resistance movement is a very strong ally of the Palestinian people. So the Palestinian people are not alone. They have a strategic depth. And these powerful resistance forces also have strong allies, whether it's in Iran or Syria or even across the world. You're talking about countries from Venezuela to China. So really, the Israel is acting against a historical trend, and they will eventually, this Israeli regime will eventually be defeated. Washington, London, Paris, these Western powers that supply the weapons of death to Israel will also be defeated in the region. They use Israel as a powerful base against the peoples of the region. They think by planting so much weapons of mass destruction inside occupied Palestine, they could threaten and intimidate the peoples of the region, divide the area, act as saboteurs, supporters of terrorist organizations. Israel and the United States have supported terrorist groups, whether in Iraq or Syria or Lebanon even. So you've got a problem here, which is that the United States hopes to dominate the region through its proxy forces, and Israel is their biggest proxy force. But the peoples of the region are 100 times stronger today. Okay. And I think, looking at the balance of forces, these resistance forces will eventually win.
Okay, well, Mustafa, what is it about this particular war on Gaza that the Israeli regime's Western backers are not even mentioning the necessity for an immediate ceasefire? The U.S. has a draft resolution right now in the U.N. requiring essentials to be allowed into Gaza, but doesn't call for a ceasefire nor a humanitarian pause. Your take.
Yeah, we also have seen yesterday or the day before two draft resolutions, one submitted by Brazil and the other one by Russia, and they were vetoed because the Americans specifically insisted on condemning the resistance, the Palestinian resistance, without actually calling for a ceasefire. I think what drove the West so mad actually is, especially in the United States, they are acting very hysterically, is the fact that this is the first time in 75 years of occupation that a Palestinian group manages at this scale with such planning and sophisticated training, apparently, to penetrate inside Israel. This has never happened before since 48. I mean, despite the six or seven wars between Israel and the Arab countries, nobody managed to enter what they call proper Israel, except for this time on the 7th of October. So the idea, as I said before, after driving as many Palestinians as possible off the face of the earth completely, the second idea is to give a lesson that any resistance movement contemplating or thinking about going inside Israel, which is legitimate, of course, because they are defending themselves, the Palestinians in this case, they should think twice for three times about it, because it's for the first time we see Israeli citizens, who are mostly illegal immigrants, in my opinion, living in shelters outside their homes and living in tents.
Right.
We are seeing refugees, you know, Israeli refugees inside the proper Israel itself, especially the area around Gaza. And the Israeli regime, especially the terrorist, Mr. Netanyahu, they want to teach us a lesson, whether the Palestinians or their supporters across the world, as mentioned by my colleague, Sami, they want to teach us a lesson, never to think about this again. But what they are forgetting is that we discovered, just for starting this 7th of October, we discovered that most of the Israeli powers actually does not exist. It doesn't make any sense at all. And they have failed in terms of the intelligence, they have failed in terms of the military, and they have failed in actually in divining any specific or clear objective of this war, as I mentioned before. And they, of course, they are capable of killing thousands of Palestinians, as we have seen so far, but that will not be a victory per se.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Right. Well, Sami, what about that? Mustafa talked about what happened on October 7th and what the Palestinians were able to do. And many analysts are saying that the whole situation has changed. Parameters have changed now since October 7th and will never return to the way it was. Mustafa mentioned about the Zionists now actually also being uprooted, whether we're talking about the northern occupied territories, the southern occupied territories right now. So I'd like to hear your perspective on that.
Yes, I think there is a definite change in the balance of forces after 7th of October. The Palestinian resistance for the first time have shown themselves to be quite a powerful force, a force which is not only sophisticated in terms of its own planning, military planning, political planning. Also, I think one important point that the Israeli regime and Western powers underestimate is that the Palestinian resistance is not just few hundred or few thousand fighters. It's really the overwhelming majority of the Palestinian people. Even those families today that are losing their babies, their children, their loved ones, they come out and say, Israel is not going to drive us out. We want freedom. We will resist this genocidal war. So there is an incredible determination amongst the Palestinian people, whether in Gaza, whether in the West Bank, whether in their refugee camps in the region, across the world. Palestinian refugees have spread across the world, millions of them. Their determination, their love of Palestine, their love of their homeland, the incredible loss they experienced over so many decades has not bent their determination. They are truly an incredible people in terms of their love of freedom, love of their homeland, their determination to achieve victory. And this is the secret weapon that the Palestinian people have. And this is the secret weapon that neither Washington nor Tel Aviv, the Israeli regime, fully comprehend and understand. Mm-hmm. There is a definite shift now in the balance of forces because the Palestinian people have been able to show this determination in action. And that is quite a historic achievement. Also, they have shown that this so-called powerful Israeli army, the fourth strongest in the world, the only nuclear power in the Middle East and so on, is ultimately an extremely vulnerable force. To rely on eliminating people and waging wars of genocide will not save this fascist regime in Tel Aviv. So they have a lot of Jewish people are also standing against Israeli regime today. That's important to point out. ordinary Jewish people across the world have joined in these mass demonstrations across the world in support of the Palestinian people and in opposition to Zionism.
Okay, well, let me get Mustafa in here, the last question. Mustafa, we talked earlier a little bit about the resistance. I want to talk about the expansion, likelihood of the expansion of this war with other forces getting involved. We know, as Sami had pointed out, about the Yemeni forces and what happened, and also we know about Hezbollah and the overall situation in the region. I mean, your take about that possibility.
Well, that's a very serious possibility, and it could be a threat to the entire region. We heard yesterday and today as well, the foreign minister of the Islamic Republic of Iran explaining the fact, you know, reiterating what he has said about a few days ago, that the whole region is it's a volcano. It could explode at any time if the Israeli the Zionists go on killing the Palestinians in Gaza. Of course, we have to remember that Israel not only occupies Palestine, but it also occupies parts of the lands of Syria as well as in Lebanon. And that's the reason why Hezbollah is fighting over there. And we have seen Hezbollah fighters, you know, launching small operations here and there, depending on the situation and how it develops inside Palestine, especially inside Gaza over the next couple of days. The whole region could explode. Plus, there's another very strong sentiment, pro-Palestinian sentiment, around the countries around occupied Palestine, be it in Jordan, be it in Egypt, be it in Syria, be it in, as far away as Morocco and Libya, and everywhere in Iraq, or almost everywhere. And that public opinion, that public anger has to be, you know, channeled towards the occupied Palestinian land somehow. And if there is no ceasefire soon, or lifting of the embargo on Gaza altogether, I think the whole barometer is not only if the conflict will change, but also the political situation around the Israeli entity will change. And I think the idea of normalizing ties with Israel, as we have seen over the last 2 years or so, I think that will stop for now, okay, at least for at this point.
Okay. Yes. And on that note, thank you both for being with me. Sami Ramadani, academic and writer out of London. Mustafa Fattori, Libyan academic and journalist out of Tripoli.
Thank you.
And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله
Answering it down some questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs
Allah هو إذا الرحمن
Allah
هو إذا المنان
لا إله إلا
Please send us your emails to our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have Sheikh Karimi to answer today's questions. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Okay, Sheikh Karimi, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the concept of spell and magic. Do they exist and are they approved according to the religion of Islam or not? If they are true, is it allowed to oppose them? I mean, the magicians or those who spell charms or spells on somebody or something.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Charms, spells, magic, these are the words that we hear a lot, and it's not, limited to our time. People have been engaged and have had questions regarding this issue from many centuries ago, according to the verses of the Quran. So, do they exist? My short answer is yes, but not as much as people imagine.
Yes.
Because we see that some people exaggerate about the truth of magic and the spell and, how they can be effective in our life. This is not the case, but we cannot negate their existence. Now, before answering the question, according to the verses of the Quran, we can divide magic into two types. Sometimes when we say sihr or magic, it is just a kind of trickery, or what people call it, close-up magic.
Like a magician do, for example, on the talent shows or something.
Exactly.
Like
that. Okay. I mean,
that's a show.
Yeah, that's a show.
Yes.
And in the Quran, we can refer to what those magicians at the time of Prophet Musa alayhi salam did. Allah says, فَإِذَا حِبَالَهُمْ وَعِسِيُّهُمْ يُخَيَّلُ إِلَيْهِ مِنْ سِحْرِهِمْ أَنَّهَا تَسْعَى For them also the concept of sihr is used.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter Taha, verse 66. Thereupon, behold, their ropes and staffs appeared to him by their magic to wriggle swiftly. Or فَلَمَّا أَلْقَوْا سَحَرُوا أَحْيُنَ النَّاسِ وَاسْتَرْهَبُوهُمْ Al-A'raf 116. When they threw, they bewitched the people's eyes and overwrought them, producing a tremendous magic.
Yes.
So this kind of magic does not have any kind of reality. Mm-hmm. I mean, a person may come and he may use some ropes, and then it appears to us as if, for example, there are snakes moving, for example. But is it real? Something is happening. Against what we are seeing? No. This is just, as you mentioned, a show, a play with these ropes and
yes.
the cards and so on and so forth. But another kind of sihr or magic, according to the verses of the Quran, has a kind of reality and it will have some effects.
Mm-hmm.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in chapter Baqarah, verse 102, فَيَتَعَلَّمُونَ مِنْهُمَا مَا يُفَرِّقُونَ بِهِ بَيْنَ الْمَرْءِ وَزَوْجِهِ referring to those two jinns or creatures, they learned a kind of sihr through which they are able to separate between